When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 210. My name's Turner Sparks.
And I am Captain America.
You can find me, a healthy Captain America. You can find me at turnersparks.com. You can find Cap in America at Cap in America on Instagram. This show is at Lost in America Pod. And on Instagram, also lostinamericapod.com. Kaplan, we're putting up new videos all the time. Oh, yeah, Lost in America Pod on just the letter N.
Find me, Captain America on Twitter. I'm ready to rant. I've been caged animal, ready to go. Let's go.
All right, hold your horses there, caged animal. Couple lessons. So that's what find us. Kaplan puts up videos of clips every week, every couple days of our previous episodes on Instagram. So follow us on Instagram. Kaplan, second most importantly, is our Patreon page, Cap. Yeah. We go, this is the engine that drives the show. If you enjoy this show, if you want to support us, the best way to do that is you go to patreon.com/lostinamerica, and you for $5 a month, you can get 3 extra episodes a week of just me and Kaplan talking about our lives in quarantine. Kaplan's life this week in extreme quarantine, down with coronavirus.
Deep in the bunker, you got to hear the ins and outs of what it was like to be in a germ-infested isolationville and trying to not infect my whole family. Find out how I did by tuning in.
Oh, there you go. A little teaser. Did the rest of his family get coronavirus or not?
Yes, exactly. So
Cap, we did 3 extra. We did 3 episodes. You had full coronavirus and we still banged out 3 episodes. That's how much we love our Patreon subscribers. So for $5 a month, not only do you get those 3 episodes, but you're supporting the show. You're keeping us going over here so we can have these great guests on.
And I should say, you really owe it to us to send us some money, because I had people who said to Randy, we were going to send you something because Michael's got coronavirus. When we heard the episode, he sounded pretty good. He sounds okay. And then they just didn't send anything. So
no,
we lost out on lots of fruit baskets and all sorts of things I was supposed to get because of my commitment to the job. So you got to become our Patreons. Make up for it, guys.
Skip the fruit basket. Nobody wants a fruit basket. Just subscribe to our Patreon page. If you want to help Kaplan, yeah, give him money through that for $10 a month. And Kaplan, you're wearing the shirt now for our people watching it on YouTube.
Yes.
You get for $10 a month, you get those 3 episodes a week from Kaplan and I doing a full throttle comedy show. Plus, you get a Lost in America t-shirt commemorating the time a couple months ago when we went to number 1 in the great country of Armenia.
Number 1 in Armenia. I also have a coffee mug. You can get that on our merch store. And I'm celebrating it nonstop here at this household. So come join me. It's great clothes. Ruby Kaplan's got a shirt. We saw that on Instagram yesterday. Everybody's enjoying the merch. It's really comfortable, quality stuff here.
And I don't know how many of those we have left, but once we sell out of those, we've been to number 1 in Chile recently.
We were number 1 in Pakistan, I saw on the charts. I got a telegram about that from the manager.
Czech Republic, we went to the number 1. And I feel like, Albania yesterday, which I don't know. We've never done an episode
about
Albania.
We just might have to print one t-shirt, number 1 in, and list all of those.
Like a tour, like a band, Megadeth tour. And then on the back, it has all the countries we went
to. We'll go alphabetical order, I guess. Albania, Chile. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to today. Yeah. On the podcast today, we have coming back, joining us again is Naveed Mahbub from Bangladesh. Kaplan, we're having him on today so we can talk about, here's the thing, it's a country that floods. I think they said 25% of the country flooded in the last year, in the last flood season. So what they've started doing, what made me interested in this, is they've started adapting to that, as opposed to, well, I guess they've tried building walls. You know, we always think, well, Miami, sure, Miami's going to flood sometime, but we just build a big wall. And that'll
build
the
levees.
Ocean.
The rich people build homes up on stilts or something, and they don't worry about it, right?
That'll do it for us. If we build a wall, it'll keep the water out. Well, walls don't work, as our president has found out, and they don't for water either. So Bangladesh has all these other ways of not fighting against the water, it seems, because water is an inevitability. From what I can tell in Bangladesh, Naveed's going to fill us in.
It rains a lot there.
And it's going to, flood season. And that's going to be inevitability for the rest of the world, too.
Climate change is happening. We believe in science in this pod, as people like to smugly say, right?
Exactly. So this is almost a look to the future, to our future. What are they doing in Bangladesh? What are they doing right in terms of dealing with the water as opposed to blocking the water that we could be doing in the future? What can we learn, Cap?
Right, because it's got to be about us, right? And, you know, it's always about us. And I live here in Long Island City. I'm on the water, and I'm in a penthouse. So I want to know, does a penthouse make me safe? Does it rise above? Am I okay? But the rest of the neighborhood could be gone. So, yeah, we need to learn, like, this is basically the future, like you said to me, of this is the climate change future. We're looking ahead a little bit, looking at Bangladesh now, is how I understand it. So
exactly. And as you said, we all want to know, you know, when you got coronavirus last week, we spent all three of those episodes finding out what you did wrong.
Yes.
So we could know if we were going to get coronavirus. We were most interested in ourselves. Same way we want to know about Bangladesh, but so we can see what the future looks like. So
because we did such a good job with New Orleans that we definitely.
Well, that was a real disaster in New Orleans. So Naveed Mahbub, we're excited to have him back on the show. He's been on the show before. You can watch. He does the Naveed Mahbub show. It's Bangladesh's late night show. Think like the David Letterman show, Jay Leno. I don't know any of the people who are on now. Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Fallon. It's one of those. It's on the CBS of Bangladesh, but it's also up on YouTube. So you can watch it on YouTube.
It's like Colbert.
You can check him out at comedian Naveed Mahbub, NaveedMahbub.com, comedian Naveed Mahbub.com. And this is also amazing. He was the winner of the 2007 Las Vegas Comedy Festival, which is pretty amazing. That's pretty hard to do. Welcome to the show, Naveed. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing really well. How are you? Good to see you, both of you.
Great to see you too. Glad you're coming to us. You were just telling us off air from your studio where you record the Naveed Mahbub show, right?
I do. And as you said, I'm actually known as the poor man's Jimmy Kimmel over here because the budget of the show, I keep saying that the budget of the show is probably less than the coffee budget of Jimmy Kimmel. But this is my studio because of COVID. I've been holed up over here for the last 9 months, and I've turned this my home into a studio, and I'm recording. My daughters are the camera people. They record the show. I do my monologue. My editor logs in remotely to the editing panel, edits. We Google Drive it to the TV channel, and then they air it.
That's amazing.
I was watching the video. It's very professionally looking. So that's impressive.
Yeah. It's a professional setup. I don't know if I'm going off topic, but I mean, I've got three lights over here. I've got three lights over there. That's one of the cameras over here. That's the editing panel. And this editor, he's top notch. But I say, you know, to stay home, just log in remotely, and it's all padded up. And oops, my camera's sliding over here. I got a chroma screen in the back so I can, well, this is not chroma. This is real sleazy. It looks like a strip club. A sleazy strip
behind there,
curtain over here. Yeah, so I just had this red thing over here when I don't want the fake background, but I got a chroma screen. So yeah, so this is how I record my TV show.
This is amazing. I mean, so cool. And obviously there was no good time for this pandemic to happen, but 2020, when technology is available, it makes it a little bit bearable, right?
It does, definitely.
So, with the water situation, we want to talk about, first of all, are you in Dhaka?
I am in Dhaka, yeah.
Okay. So, is that the capital?
That's the capital.
That is the
capital. Okay. And the big, there you go. Yeah. How is the flooding? Like, what was last flood season like? Just I think we should start off there.
Well, okay. The last flood season was just a few months ago. And it's a regular phenomenon every year because of the nature of the terrain over here. We are barely several feet above sea level. So if you look at New Orleans, this whole country is like New Orleans pretty much, except for the southeast, there's a little bit of hilly area. So, and it's also a subtropical region. So we have a lot of rainfall, and especially during the monsoon. So when it rains, the water, it kind of slides off into the rivers. But the rivers get so much of water, then it overflows into all the land around, surrounding it. So it's a very natural phenomena, and you really can't do without it. So, I mean, you really can't do anything about it. It has to be such a massive undertaking to be able to hold the water off. Just imagine what you had in New Orleans, when Katrina happened, right? So it was devastating. But if you imagine the whole country being like New Orleans, so what do you do? And so it's become a regular phenomenon. We're almost prepared for it because we know that it's happening year in and year out. It's really a question of degree, how severe it's going to get. And now with more land getting filled up, there's less place for the water to go to. And so it's a regular phenomenon. To answer your question, when did it happen? It was just a few months ago. Now it's a dry season, so we're okay now. But several months ago, it was, we were seeing the accumulation of water.
Yeah, so Bangladesh is now at the inevitability phase, meaning it's going to happen every year, and we know it's going to happen. And I think, it seems like trending, like we're all going to get that way, at least certain parts of every country, depending upon how close they are to the water. So what the old way of dealing with it, I think maybe in the 1960s they built these, but they're calling polders, from what I've read. But those are like what we did in New Orleans, where you build a levee around it. I lived in New Orleans in 2003 for a summer. I was telling Kaplan.
He was in charge of the levees. It was a summer job.
I was in charge. I was working in a music magazine. And what I told Kaplan was they had, as part of like the tourist thing to do in 2003, a year before Katrina, was you could go to the top of the tallest building in New Orleans. And they'd be like, oh yeah, come to the top, have a drink, like a $20 cocktail. And you can look out and see how New Orleans is surrounded by levees holding out the water. So meaning New Orleans is in a fish bowl. It's in a bowl. Like it's under, all of New Orleans was underneath the water system. And none of these idiots at the top of these buildings thought that somehow that was going to break or anything bad was going to happen. Of course it did. And then when that happened, the water filled in the bowl. And so New Orleans went underwater, basically parts of it. So what I've read, that is what is this term of a polder, I think that they use.
Dutch
kind of created and then was used in Bangladesh in certain parts almost to create these communities. Am I right?
Yes, but there's so much you can do. As I mentioned before, what's different over here terrain-wise is that it's a riverine country, meaning that we have rivers just about everywhere. So if you look at the geography, on the very north are the Himalayas where the Everest is, okay? So why is it that we have so many rivers? We meaning not only just Bangladesh, but also a good part of India and Myanmar, is that on the very north are the Himalayas. And when the snow melts, it melts and it becomes a river. And then as it goes downstream, and then it all ends up in the ocean. So it's like a lot of veins and sub-veins are like literally hundreds and thousands of rivers. So unlike New Orleans, where it's land and you're surrounded by water, here we have water bodies within all the land mass. And the land mass isn't that high enough anyway. So if you look at, you mentioned about global warming. So there's more snow melting. And so there's more water coming down. And then the rivers are also getting a lot more water than you would normally have. And then there are also these dams upstream. And whoever controls the dam, sometimes it's another country who has the dam, which is India. So if they're opening the dam, a lot of more water is coming in. If they have the dams closed for whatever the reason, then we're not getting much water. So it's very unpredictable. Also, how much of water are in the rivers depends on when and how and on what basis these dams are opened up upstream. And it's in another country. Just imagine if the dams were in Canada and the rivers are flooded, the river Mississippi is coming into the United States, but they're opening and closing the dam, and then you have no control of how much water you have in the river. So that's one factor.
Yeah,
that's crazy. You don't have to nuke them. I mean, we don't have the nukes, unfortunately, but they have the nukes. So that's one factor. And then there are all this rain. So now the when you fill up the river, they're overflowing. So how do you build a dike like the Dutch did? You know, they built a dike so the land is actually below sea level, and you like put a wall there like Donald Trump's wall, and that holds the water. It really doesn't work over here that way. So yeah, it's an inevitable thing we're going to have the flood.
Eventually, the wall breaks, right, and it fills up these towns, villages, whatever they might be. So the solution. So what I've read that Bangladesh has started more recently coming up with solutions to not keep out the water, but to live within amongst the water, almost to not resist it, but to use it. Is that happening?
Well, it happens in the sense that you want this water to end up in water bodies instead of land where people are living, right?
Yes.
Another problem is that a lot of, for economic reasons, and it definitely has an environmental impact. And again, I'm not an expert on this matter, but it's just based on observation. It's the common knowledge.
That's what our show is, by the way.
Yeah. Not an expert.
Yeah. We have comedians to talk
about. I'm an engineer, too.
Oh, you're an engineer.
I'm an engineer,
well.
Too.
Yes.
Oh, I'm an engineer. So,
our audience is going to get extra smart today.
So I'm an electrical engineer, not a civil engineer who are the experts on close enough for you guys. Okay. So the thing is that a lot of these water bodies are also getting filled up because there are so many people. We have 160 million people in 56,000 square miles, just to put things in perspective. We're smaller than the state of Michigan and we have 160 million people. And the joke is that if Bangladesh were ever a state of the United States, we'd have 170 electoral college votes. You know, that's how much, you know, everybody would be running after us. Yeah. Today, 14 December, we would be like kicking ass.
A lot of fraud.
I think, so, I mean, we would be the champion of electoral votes. That's how many people we have over here. It's like, so anyway.
You have more than Russia, the entire country.
I mean, to put it in perspective, you have half of the United States population living in the state of Michigan.
Yeah.
Exactly. And in the U.S., you have 9,000 people equals one electoral vote, right? So just do the math. How many electoral votes we would have had? We'd kick ass right now.
Yeah. Anyways.
They might. Who would you vote for? Because if it's Trump, they might put you into the country real quick just to get him over.
Well, I mean, see. If we digress to Trump, I mean, the thing is that I have this theory that many comedians actually vote for Donald Trump because Donald Trump keeps comedians in business.
That's true.
Look at Stephen Colbert. He's losing steam. His last monologue was on his two-year-old footage of what he did in New Zealand because he's running out of topics. I mean, after come January 20, we'll all be out of business. All the comedians must have voted for Trump. That's what I think.
I'm with you. Stephen Colbert's ratings were terrible before Trump. He was on the air and barely getting anything. And then he switched to Trump and it like shot him through the roof.
I mean, I mean, it's not just him. I mean, hang on, I'm going to show you something.
No, Naveed's gone.
He's gone on a, he's got props, got slideshows. The smartest podcast.
Sorry, I'm just kind of going off whack over here. But
no problem.
Just imagine I'm like this poor man's Jimmy Kimmel. And I had this friend who lives in California. I asked her, can you get me a Donald Trump wig? And she got me this Donald Trump wig.
Oh, boy.
Which I use
wig,
occasionally.
Folks.
Yeah. So it's like a cheap one.
Can you
like
put that on?
I can. I sure
since
can. And trust me. And she wouldn't take money from me. She said, you got to do comedy at my brother's wedding, which is horrible. When you do comedy at a wedding, it's the most horrible thing you could do as a comedian. But I did just because of Donald Trump's wig. So I got this. And just imagine me, a poor man's Jimmy Kimmel. I even milked your president to have occasional arrivals of Donald Trump, a brown version of. He would freak out. I'm like Donald Trump's nightmare. I'm being Donald Trump as a classic symbol of immigrants he doesn't want inside the United States. So I'm doing this Trump image, and I do a pretty good impression. I'm telling you, people people give me a lot of flack over here. So, Naveed, why aren't you doing comedy on local politics? I say, you know, you can't. That's like taboo. You can't. I'll get arrested. So I have a Donald Trump wig, and that's not it. And then I also have a Boris Johnson wig. They look the same. Okay.
Pretty much the same wig.
They look the same. Yeah. It, pretty much the same. Yeah. It's like Amazon cheap stuff. So anyway,
if you could come to America wearing that wig, you get in as an immigrant. Trump made that an exception. You look like him.
Probably.
Oh my gosh.
But just to put things in perspective, everywhere, not just the United States, even here, comedians are making money out of Donald Trump. I made money out of Donald Trump just by wearing this wig. I'm going to miss him, definitely.
It's amazing.
Sorry, I digress from water to Donald Trump.
This is our OG. All right, yeah, back to the water. So,
I was
reading stuff about how they're building, and sometimes in the villages where it's flooding every single year, they've decided, as opposed to getting their houses flooded, they're building them up onto stilts almost, and then digging ponds underneath it. Are you familiar with that stuff?
Yeah. It's like almost like in New Orleans. You know, I remember I visited this cemetery in New Orleans, where the cemetery is actually raised on pillars because certain time the water comes. I don't know if you've been there, and it's very much like that because you know that certain times of the year it's almost given that the water is going to come. So rather than have your house being underwater, you build it on stilts, and these are also a lot of time they're just shanty houses you build on bamboo sticks, you know, and it's cheap, it's quick, but the advantage is that when the water comes, you're above water. Okay.
Yeah. And almost they were saying that some people were even digging, not only like the house would be at ground level, but under their house, they would dig a ditch that would become a pond once the water came, like it filled up the ditch under their house. And then the house is on the stilts. So there's water underneath you, but not in your house because it's all going down into the ditch. And then in the summertime, whenever the hot season came, the water would evaporate and cool the house by the water going up. Is that correct?
Okay.
Have you seen a home like this?
You're putting me on the spot right now because you know more about this than I do.
Well, no. So that's my question. Go ahead.
But I wouldn't be surprised if something like that is happening because, as you were saying, that everything is adaptive. You know the water's going to come. You know you can't keep the water out. So what's the best you can do about it? And if that's happening, it's definitely innovative.
Do you do anything specifically at your home? Do you have any sort of...
Dude, I mean, you're like truly American, you know. You have this typical question that if you live on a tree, you have like snake charmers. No, I live in the city, man.
Okay,
I live in Taka City. But to be fair, Taka City, despite being the capital city, and it's like the New York City, it's very cosmopolitan. But at the same time, Taka City actually gets a lot worse flooded. Mm-hmm. And this is called water logging. You can have a half a day of rain and you'll have a foot of water on many of the major streets. And that is a man-made calamity because one, a lot of people are bad with trash. They're throwing plastic here and there. So the drainage sewage systems get clogged, number one. Mm. Number two, a lot of the areas around the city, because if you talk about urban sprawl, Taka City is the classic example of urban sprawl. You know, out of these 160 million people in the whole country, 20 million live in Taka City alone. So it's very centralized. Unlike the US, you know, you have major cities all spread out. Even in India, it's very decentralized. You have states, their own governments. Over here, everybody wants to come and live and work in Taka City. So there's a lot of pressure here. Out of 160, 20 million people live in the city. It's not a big city area-wise. So if there's so many people, now the city is expanding, and generally the country is lowland, which becomes filled with water. But now what's happening, they're dredging, meaning that they're actually digging soil from under the rivers, off the big rivers, and bringing that soil and filling up all these lowlands around the city. So the city is getting bigger, but the problem is when the rain happens, the water has no place to go. Before, this water would go to these, it's like a sewage system, right? That, like the lowlands, the water would go there and the city would be dry. Now the city had, the water has nowhere to go. So Dhaka City, despite being like New York City, it's got its affluent pockets and everything. Half a day of rain, we get water a lot. So that's the huge problem.
All right. Navid, hold that thought, and we're going to cut away. We have our first sponsor, our first paying sponsor ever on the podcast. How cool is that?
Yes, yes.
Just came in while we were recording.
I mean, if you want me to plug your sponsor, I'd be happy to. I know you got to keep them happy. So
we'll tell you about it real quick, and then we'll cut away. But it's called Magic Spoon, Navid. It's a
Magic Spoon. I love Magic Spoon. I've never heard of Magic Spoon, but I tell you, everybody in Bangladesh is going crazy about Magic Spoon. You got to sponsor this show because 160 million people do not go to bed without the taste of Magic Spoon, whatever the hell that is.
They do sponsor the show. They are a sponsor.
We don't have to tell them
enough. He's getting them to sponsor.
No, you got to tell your sponsor the poor man's Jimmy. I'm not kidding you.
He wants them to sponsor him.
I'm actually endorsing this. You know,
you're endorsing.
Tell him that the Jimmy Kimmel of Bangladesh is endorsing
Magic Spoon. How amazing is that? Listen, you hear that, Magic Spoon? The Jimmy Kimmel of Bangladesh is on board. All right, Cap, let's go to let's hear more about Magic Spoon. Magic Spoon, Kaplan.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have our first sponsor.
It's our first paying sponsor. Yeah, we've had sponsors before in the past, but they didn't give us anything.
Bunch of cheapskates, those guys.
Jay gave us free whatever. Who cares? Who needs them? We now have Magic Spoon. Kaplan, this is a grain-free cereal. All right, Magic Spoon. Remember when you were a kid, you had like, there were two kinds of families, I think, when we were kids. For cereal, there was the families like mine who there was no sugary anything. Cereals.
That's child abuse, your family. And in my family, we were every kid's favorite family on the block because we had everything. We had all the sugars, every single name. I won't name all those old fashioned ones, but we had them all in our house. Kids came over. They liked to eat every morning. I grew up on it. So I've been hankering for it my whole life. That sugary cereal buzz.
Well, now we got it, Cap. Yep. Magic Spoon. Yes. So Magic Spoon is a cereal company. You can only get it by ordering it. And if you want to order it, you go to magicspoon.com/lost, L-O-S-T, and you put in L-O-S-T at checkout to get free shipping. You can't buy this in the stores. You can only get it through us. Magic Spoon, grain-free cereal. They have four flavors. They have cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry, four different flavors. And it's all what you would think of when you were a kid, those sugary cereals. So the best part is it's no sugar. It's sugar-free. It's keto-friendly. It's gluten-free. It's grain-free. It's soy-free. It's low-carb and GMO-free.
So it's the perfect, if you're a nostalgic hipster type who also wants to be paleo or wants to be healthy in general, you want to lose some weight, this is the way to do both. You get the nostalgia of the eating the cereal. I've heard they're delicious, right?
I had them for breakfast this morning.
What did you have this morning? What flavor did you have?
Cap, I can hear you dying of Corona over there. They haven't sent it to you. It hasn't arrived for you yet.
I haven't gotten it yet. So.
Because you're still in quarantine. But for me, they came yesterday. This morning, I had the blueberry flavor. It was fantastic. For those people watching on YouTube, I'm holding in front of me. Which one is this? This is the frosted. So this is what I'm going to try next. The blueberry was insane. It was so good. I don't understand how it has no sugar in it. Yeah, you tried it. I tried it. Apparently, it says no sugar, so there's no sugar. But it just tastes like any of those fruity, like we said, we're not naming the kinds, but those things you had when you were a kid.
When you were
now
a
you
kid
can have it as adults, and you can give it to your kids. How about that?
Yeah, I've dumped my kids. I dumped all their terrestrial cereal down the trash. All their regular cereals is gone. They're going to be eating this every morning. They're going to, because they got to be fit. I want to raise fit children, not fat slobs like the rest of America.
No so fat.
I'm going to raise fit kids. If you want to raise fit kids, if you want to be fit, the holiday season's coming up. You know, you have the rest of the day to eat your sugars and stuff. But breakfast, most important meal of the day, right? So eat healthy. That's the meal you eat the healthiest. So
you don't wake up
Yeah.
With just 10 pounds. I mean, Dr. Bob, he's a doctor. He was feeding you this stuff when you were.
He's a foot doctor is the problem. It comes down to the feet. The feet want sugar.
This has zero sugar, 11 grams of protein, only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. I had one bowl. I'm full. That was a breakfast for me. Anyway, magicspoon.com/lost, L-O-S-T. Be sure to use our promo code LOST at checkout to get free shipping. And Magic Spoon, so confident in this cereal, it is backed with 100% happiness guarantee.
Happiness, they're guaranteeing you, not just satisfied taste, happiness. You will be happy eating this.
You'll be happy. So, but you can't say, yes, the cereal made me happy, but I'm happy, but I'm unhappy about the Georgia election.
Right. You know? No, that doesn't count. Don't give us that loophole. No, it's got to be the cereal specific happiness.
Yeah. Yeah. Cereal specific happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund you money back, 100% money back. No questions asked. They're not going to ask, are you unhappy because, you know, you got in a car accident yesterday. They're not going to ask you why, but just not going to ask you about that. Exactly. But the most main reason why you should buy this is because if you buy it and you use our promo code
LOST,
they know LOST LOST. They know then we're making money for them.
Exactly. And then it's good for us. So that's what we like to say. Buy your first box for us. You could buy your second box for you.
Yes.
And, But do it for us. We need, you know, come on. We need to show we're salesmen.
We've been doing this for 4 years, Kaplan. I mean, this is insane.
I mean,
4 years. And they say Rome wasn't built in a day. They didn't say it was going to take 4 years.
They did not say that.
You know, but here we are. We finally arrived at it. 4 years in. 4 years in. We're finally making money.
Please buy it. Begging you.
Please,
I'll send you my credit card, maybe. If you hit me up in Twitter.
Naveen Maboob just endorsed it 5 minutes. We've been doing this for 5.5 minutes now.
Yeah.
He endorsed this 5 minutes ago. He's the number. He told him. You heard him. He's the number. He's the
Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah. He's on board. You have no excuses.
No excuses. Well, I should say that it's U.S. only. It's currently shipping in the United States. So unfortunately, we're missing out on 160 million people in Bangladesh. But besides them, anyone in the United States, all 50 states, this is no lower 48 business. If you're in Alaska, we're big in Alaska, Cap.
All right, good, good. All right, Alaska, boom, you get it.
And if there's a place you need breakfast, it's Alaska.
You need Alaska everywhere. You don't got to go out. This is great for quarantining. The last thing we should say is you order this. You don't have to go to the grocery store. Speak for me. I got coronavirus in a grocery store, going to the grocery store.
So don't
do what I did. Order it to be delivered, you know, to your house.
If you would have had Magic Spoon, Kaplan, you wouldn't have coronavirus. Right.
I mean,
now.
Magic Spoon could have saved my life. So yes, it could save
yours. Would certain members of your family. And if you want to know who, go to patreon.com/lostinamerica.
Double plug. Anyway, Magic Spoon.
Cocoa, fruity, frosted blueberry. You got it memorized already. Cap, that's it. Magicspoon.com/lost. Let's get back to Naveen Maboob. All right, we're back, Kaplan. How about that? Naveen Kaplan, our very first ever sponsor.
You were here. You heard history.
Oh, I did. But on a serious note, if you have a sponsor on board, that tells you, that says a lot about the show. That means they have, they see the value of the show. And so definitely congratulations to both of you.
Thank you, sir.
We have it's our audience too. We have a deep pocketed audience and they know that. So, and a healthy audience. So, yeah.
Great. So back, back to the, to DACA. You were saying that they're building up, they're dredging the rivers and they're building up the soil around the city. And so is that again causing like a bowl in the city because they're raising around the city?
No, not quite. The city, if you imagine, the city is in Highland, okay? But around the city, there are lots of these rivers, basically. They're low land. So when it rains in the city, this water would, I mean, I'm not saying monsoon rain, I'm saying a half a day of heavy downpour.
Sure.
Then what happens, all this water to the sewage system ends up in these lowlands. Okay. They're like drains, basically, if you look at it that way. So everything is fine. But now that the city needs to get big to accommodate these 20 million people, so what's happened is that they're bringing this soil, they're dredging this soil from faraway rivers. They're putting them on boats and bringing them here, and they're filling up all these low land to develop these new housing developments, basically. So now everything is there's no low land for the water to drain into. And then what happens? This water remains in the city, and we get, it's not flooding, but it's more water logging. So you can drive a car, but you're driving through a half a foot or a foot of water.
It's just normal to be driving through. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
People in LA couldn't handle that, or a lot of people in a lot of cities in America.
They people in LA can't handle. I used to live in Michigan, and people in LA can't even handle a half an inch of snow.
Yeah, probably. The whole city shut down.
Has that changed the way people live at all in DACA?
Well, again, they have. For example, if it's a half a day of rain, you know that once you go out, I mean, I'm not talking about COVID times. I'm talking about, let's say, about 8-9 months ago when there was no knowledge of COVID. You would know that, okay, you know, it's we've had a half a day of rain. I'd better be prepared. My car can break down because it's more than a foot of water. Okay, I got to be prepared for that. If I'm planning to take a motorbike, I'm not going to be on a motorbike because it's going to be, I can't go through a foot of water in motorbike. So you prepare yourself. You know that you have to, you're better off if you had a boat than a car or a bicycle.
So is that happening? Are people taking boats?
No, I mean, it depends. But you know, certain places where it gets really bad, it makes the headlines. Oh, look at this street. It's like, you know, they're using a boat. Okay. I'm not saying it's like a whole flurry of boats, but somebody actually said, you know what, it's smarter to get a boat out there. So, you know, they said, yeah, I'll take a boat out.
So what does the future look like? So that's what's happening in the city. And then in the countryside, it's more extreme flooding. Is that right?
I mean, they're losing their farms and stuff in a lot of cases, right? Because you can't build anything to when it floods in the countryside.
Well, I mean, see, this is a subtropical country. To some, some crop are okay with a lot of water, which is, for example, rice. Rice is a very common crop that is cultivated here. And the closest picture I could depict is that in the United States, people know about Vietnam, okay? For whatever reasons, you know, I mean, there's a history of Vietnam, whatever. Yeah. But a lot of movies,
skirmish there.
A little detail.
Yeah, a skirmish. but at least, you know, either in documentaries or movie, you've seen Vietnam, right? So if you see Vietnam, that's very much like what this part of the world is. And when you see Vietnam, what do you see? You just see a lot of these paddy fields, right? So that's what it is over here. These are all paddy, rice. And when they're inundated in water, they're okay. That crop is okay. And that's maybe one reason why we grow so much of rice. We eat a lot of rice. And we have these rice bellies too. But they're okay. Not a lot of them. Yeah, not a lot of them get damaged.
And so what do you think? Have you heard of it? What the solutions might be going forward? Or what the adjustments are to society or anything like that from the government or engineers or anybody?
Well, I mean, there's so much that any government can do. You know, I mean, government can do so much. There are a lot of things we individuals can do. For example, if we change certain individual habits, like littering, for example, I'm going on a 5 Series BMW, I'm having a bag of chips, and then I'm just throwing it out onto the streets. I'm not getting fined for littering, but these plastic bags end up in the sewage system, which is causing a lot of the clogging. So these are things individuals, as just from our civic sense, we can make quite a bit of a difference. Number two, all these lowlands we are filling up just for the sake of economic gain. We need to stop doing that, because these water bodies were there for a reason. If you're filling them up, we are messing with the environment, and there's no place for the water to go to. So that's, again, boils down to the individuals, how responsible we are. And third, of course, this is not just a Bangladesh issue, it's a global issue, that how much heated are we getting the environment? That means global warming. For example, It's all based on emissions. It's all based on how many factories we are running, right? You saw, I mean, we all visibly saw the how clear the sky was back in March and April when we had a forced lockdown, just because we were just did not have cars on the streets. So now if everybody doesn't take a car out, but rather they carpool or start using ride sharing, which has become very popular now. So these individual habits can actually make a difference. A lot of people say, I got money, but I'm not going to buy a car. It's too much of a hassle. I'm just going to use Uber. Or I'm just going to, you know what? I've got four kids in the neighborhood. We'll just take one carpool to the school. So these individual habits can all make somewhat of a difference.
It's kind of depressing. The most successful climate policy that any government's done, like in my lifetime, has been coronavirus. This year we have low emissions. It's like not even a joke. Like we have low emissions. Like Trump's final year is going to have the lowest emissions on record for America in a long time because of.
Not just America.
Yeah.
It's just not America. It's just everywhere. There was a very classic photo of New Delhi, the capital of India. They have this Dr. Trump kind of a structure there, and they actually showed a photo from 2018 and 2020. I mean, it's like day and night difference because how clear it is. It was in Mars, probably not as much now, but in Mars. So yeah, emissions went down. I mean, we have one of the most polluted environments over here. It's always in the red category, and we were down to green when the lockdown started, but we're back in red again.
Really?
Do you have any sort of, because it's hard because you don't want to combat, I mean, rising like poverty. You don't want to cause more poverty in a country like Bangladesh. So what does the government do to try to get people to lower emissions or as a country? Is there any sort of policies or?
Well, it's just, it's all a question of degrees, more or less the same thing everywhere, right? Yeah. And why did Mr. Donald Trump pull out of the Paris Accord? He said, you know, it's not fair. You want us to stop our factories, and then how are we going to run? And it's more or less the same thing everywhere. It's like a check and balance. You know, you're talking about drilling in Alaska. Everybody wants to drive a car. They need the oil, but they say, you know, we're not going to drill in Alaska because it's a natural habitat. So it's always a trade-off. There's no win. It's always like you gain something, you lose something. So same over here. That sure, I mean. You want to reduce pollution, but if you shut the factories down, people are going to die. What are we going to live off? And one of the major exports from Bangladesh is the garments industry. You know, the clothes that you wear. You go to Sears or you go to JCPenney. And trust me, when you see made in, it'll say made in Vietnam or it's going to say made in Bangladesh. A $30 shirt you buy, you know how much Sears pays over here? Probably like $2 or $3. So, I mean, can you imagine how cheap the factories have to run and millions of people are living off of these factories
So that's a great point.
So if you shut that factory down, then, you know, what are these people are going to do? Even America is going to say, what are we going to wear? Are we going to get like shirts from JCPenney?
It is a great point. You know, like we cleaned up a lot of America in the 70s and 80s and everything. But all that meant by cleaning up, in quotes, was we just took the factories and shut them down and then started buying stuff from factories in China and Southeast Asia and then started saying, oh, China and Southeast Asia, you're polluting so much. But they're polluting because they're producing things that we're buying.
They're also polluting because the people are getting, people are getting lifted out of poverty. And it's not like, oh, go back to being poor.
Exactly.
We had our fun. And now it's like, so that's the problem.
They're poor, so we can.
We cause a lot of the problems that are affecting Bangladesh now, but so that's.
Shame on you.
Sorry.
Shame on us.
I drove a Geo Prism. I'm not the problem back when I was a kid. No.
Geo Prism. Yeah. See, this is the thing. In America, they say, when I was a kid, I drove this. Over here, a lot of people can never say, I drove this because many people can't even buy cars. You just hurt my feelings, man. I don't have a car now, by the way. I got three kids. I got no car.
Really?
I don't have a car either.
I don't need a car. You're in New York City. You don't need a car.
So what about migration? We've read that there's like people are going to have to live somewhere in the future. Is there a plan for where to migrate people, where people can live when a lot of these things, the flooding gets worse and worse?
Well, it's one of those things where a lot of people want to live somewhere else because a lot of places are in many ways nicer. So a lot of people, you know, I mean, it depends on how Mr. Biden does. You know, a lot of us will just go to America and live there. That's a nice country, man.
Well, you can't. No, but I mean, sure. Welcome. Welcome. But I'm in other parts. Is the government thinking of, oh, people can live in this part of the country or that part of the country?
Is there a safer area?
Oh, I see. Oh,
or is it?
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Damn. I thought I got my hopes up over there. Are you saying
you're all relocating
within the country?
Turner wants to make it bring all 160 million Michigan.
Yeah, come on over.
We have a lot of space in this country. Let's be honest. The middle of the country.
Delta's flights are not very full right now. So this is a way to fill them up.
Oh, tell me. I mean, we'll fly not only coach, we'll fly cargo. We'll be in the cargo. We'll come there, man. Cargo, I mean, we'll hang
safer.
We hang on buses when we travel. We can go intercity 5 hours. We can just hang on a bus. You know, if the planes don't fly that high, we can hang on the engine. Not a big deal. Not a big deal, man. We'll show up. We'll show up right. But no, anyway, to answer your question, there's always this, there is a huge pressure on Dhaka City. As I mentioned, 20 million out of 160 million live in just Dhaka City. It's a small city. It's not that big a city, geographically speaking. So there is always the benefit if people are spread out. But the problem is that Bangladesh is not as decentralized. Though it is decentralized, meaning, let's say in the US, you have 50 states. They're all like 50 countries, basically, right? You can live anywhere and you're fine. You get good hospitals, you get good schools, you get good companies, everything's fine. Over here, it's not as evenly distributed. All the best things, relatively speaking, are in Dhaka City. So everybody wants to be here. So let's say if your work sends you to a smaller town, you actually have cleaner air, it's nice and open, it's not crowded, but you want to come to Dhaka City because you want to send your kids to a good school, which you're not going to get over there. So it's, of course, all these are being addressed, but the country is just 49 years old. I mean, if you look at United States, it's like you're being in 1830 if you start from the clock from 1776.
That's
right. So if we're like the United States at 1830, that's when really electoral colleges had to work their butts to go down to Washington, actually cast their votes. So that's how young this country is. It's going to take some time.
Well, I got good news. We didn't have any problems after 1830 until, you know, we were smooth. It's smooth sailing as the 19th century.
I want to say too, that you bring up a great point in researching this podcast, in researching in advance to do this podcast. The first thing I came across is that Bangladesh was founded in 1971.
Yeah, I had no idea.
And that
right.
blew my mind. I thought Bangladesh was hundreds, if not thousands of years old.
I don't know.
I had no idea.
No. I mean, it depends on how much time you give me on the history. But this, in fact, today is 15th of December. And tomorrow, 16th of December, is the victory day. Bangladesh turns 49 years old tomorrow.
Wow, happy birthday, Bangladesh.
Thank you. So tomorrow is our 4th of July, basically. So, yeah, 1971 is when Bangladesh was born. And Bangladesh, to give you a very, very 30-second history, is that the India consisted of one single country called India, which consisted of Pakistan, Bangladesh, and India. Till 1947. And the British came, you know, that's the typical story. Mm-hmm. British come and then it's time for Brexit. They screw everything up. So they just came on a, it's not even an army. Their businessmen came here. They took over the country for 119 years. And when they left, they said, we're going to split it up into two countries called India and Pakistan. But they did the demarcation based on just religion. That's okay. Hindus are in the middle. They're in India. Pakistan, all Muslims on this side and that side. Now, it happens that it's like two separate countries, I mean, two separate pieces of land, and there was India right in the middle. So there was a lot of issues, discrimination.
So Pakistan ruled the area then?
Yeah, so it was West Pakistan was what's today's Pakistan, and East Pakistan is what's today's Bangladesh. And there was a country called India right in the middle. So one country split into two with another country. So just imagine United States, just imagine like it's Mexico and Canada are the same country, and then you have United States in the middle. Right. Okay, oh. And then Canada has everything going nice, and Mexico, they get all the crap over there. It's like they get nothing, discrimination. So then Mexico one day says, screw it, you know, we're just going to be an independent country. So it was like 27 years of discrimination. And then finally, there was a war, and then we became independent. But America didn't support us at that time.
Didn't.
Oh, come on.
No, it did not.
Were you guys communists or something at the time?
No, we were not. We were absolutely not communists. But, you know, Henry Kissinger, your Secretary of State, man, this guy.
Dr. Kissinger.
Dr. Kissinger.
He screwed up a few parts of the world as well.
Oh, man. And he got the Nobel Peace Prize. That's the funniest thing.
Oh, yeah.
What did he do? Give me the story, because I don't know it very well. Obviously, I don't know it at all.
Okay, so when the war had, so there was a war of independence, basically, and it started 26th of March and ended at 31st of December. So when the, the Bangladesh started the war against West Pakistan, but then India came and helped us, Bangladesh, become independent. Now, India also had a vested interest because India and Pakistan are rivals, you know, since 1947, they're arch enemies. So they actually had the Pakistan on two fronts. Okay, so imagine if Canada
interest.
And
yeah.
So if they say, you know what, if I can help Bangladesh, the East Pakistan become independent, I only have to worry about Pakistan on the west.
Divide and conquer, they call that.
Exactly. So no war is actually fought, out of charity. There's always a vested interest, right? Like when the U.S. went to Vietnam, it's not that they say, oh, we're going to keep the communists out. They just wanted to make sure that the U.S. had its clear sphere of influence. I'm sorry, I bring that up. So it worked out that Bangladesh became independent and India has only Pakistan to worry about right now. So that's really the history.
Wow.
And we just stayed out of it, or what you were saying?
Okay. The United States. What happened? You know, this was the time of the Cold War. Okay, either your Soviet bloc or your
right U.S.
The only bloc. Good communists, the dead communists. That time.
Damn.
Yeah, true. Now, Bangladesh or Pakistan was never a communist country, but Pakistan, despite having military rulers, was a very close ally of the United States because, you know, they would buy arms and everything. So they didn't want to piss off the eastern part of the country. And so when the Sixth Fleet or something was stationed in the Bay of, in the Indian Ocean, and then also in the United Nations, there was a lot of debate on this, in favor of Bangladesh becoming an independent country. And the only country that vetoed was the United States. And then this is actually part of history of Boston, that there were a lot of arms being loaded up on a ship which was destined for Pakistan, and Americans from Harvard and MIT, they actually went and protested, and they were trying to block these arms shipment going to Pakistan because there was literally a genocide going on. We lost 3 million people. I have friends whose parents were murdered and they were never found. And it was like systematic, almost like ethnic cleansing going to 3 million people. It's not a matter of joke. That many people died. So, but at that time, Pakistan was a real, it was a real close ally of the United States. And the Washington said, you know, I'm not going to piss off. Become independent, but, you know, we're not going to support that. So that's really what the equation was at that time.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I had no idea. And so now where do we stand? I know I've been reading that India historically, maybe because of 1971, has been seen as like an ally of sorts, but sometimes a rival. But now China is coming in and building a lot of bridges and roads and infrastructure. And what's the relationship now like between Bangladesh with China on one side, India on the other side?
Wow, you've done your homework, man. You know a lot.
This guy does so much research.
he's done, and this is actually a very interesting point. Historically, if India has been a very close ally of Bangladesh, because all said and done, I mean they helped Bangladesh become an independent country. They fought the war on behalf of Bangladesh, so there definitely has to be a sense of gratitude over there. And so, hence, over the years, India and Bangladesh are very close. But then again, you know, Bangladesh is now 49 years old. It's like, you know, you're like a teenager kid, you know, said, okay, fine. We got an ally, but we just want to make sure the ally doesn't always This good friend of mine has been good to us, has helped us become an independent country, but we also don't want this ally to always have us do things that we may not necessarily agree with.
You don't want them to own you, right?
Exactly. You know, I'm just being diplomatic so that I don't get into trouble. So
no trouble over here.
So then there's China over there, which is a regional, it's almost become a superpower right now. And China and India are also arch rivals.
Yes.
You know, on one side, there's India and Pakistan. On the south and southwest, and on the northeast, it's India and China. So now it's almost like Bangladesh is an attractive young lady and two guys are courting this girl. And, you know, we're being very capable. We say, you know what? Fine. We can two time. It's okay.
Yeah. I'm not married.
I can two time. So
you gotta get your free dinners. Get your free dinners, ladies.
Exactly. You know, I'll date you like 4 days a week. I'll date you 3 days a week. I get free dinners. And guess what? I mean, I keep both in check. So Bangladesh has become very clever. I would say it's very smart, saying that, you know, why am I going to just pull all my eggs in one basket? And so here, China wants to be good friends. Here's India wants to be good friends. And guess what? Here's also the United States, which wants to be good friends.
Look at that.
And in countries like these, how do you become good friends? You actually become a part of the infrastructure development. So that means, let's say you want to build a bridge. You say, you know what, we're going to give the expertise. We'll give you low interest loan. That's one. Another is that we can sell you things like arms or aircrafts and stuff. That's where the United States loses out, because they try to come and sell, but everything is so expensive. And then they say, oh, Chinese is cheap. So even if you want to buy a fighter jet, you can buy three fighter jets with what you would buy an F-18 Hornet from the United States. So that's where the United States loses out. So U.S. is also trying to be a part of this thing. So Bangladesh is in a very advantageous position in here. In that sense, I would say, is that you have these big brothers around you, not just one or two, but there are three. And you say, it's fine. I want to be in good relationship with everybody. And why not? I have nothing against anybody. Everybody's been good to me. I'm good to everybody. But I'm going to be very democratic in the way I show my friendship. So you build this bridge. You build this bridge. Okay, you build this bridge.
So America builds one bridge. China builds another. India builds a third. Yeah. So you said earlier that, you know, nothing's for free. There's always nothing's altruistic. There's always some reason. What's the reason why everybody wants to be friends with Bangladesh? Is it because where you're located?
It is a growing economy. And by the way, when these bridges or infrastructure are being built, nothing is done for free. They are making money. Yeah. Their companies are making money. But the thing is that Bangladesh, I mean, if you just look at it in terms of pure economics, why is India such a big market for the United States? Or why is China such a big market for the United States? Just because there are a billion people over there, right? Why does Amazon want to come to India? Because a billion people. So we don't have a billion people, but we have 160 million people, middle-income people. It's become a middle-income country. So that means people's buying power has gone up. So from pure dollars and cents, it's a big market for any kind of commerce. So China builds products, India builds products, the United States builds products. So it's pure business sense and dollars and cents that if you're in good relationship with this country, you have a market where you can sell your products and services. Simple as that.
I think it makes sense. What do you see for the future? Back to just... For the country, what do you see for the future in dealing with the water crisis? Do you think it's more of an adapting to the inevitability and building infrastructure, building architecture around it? Or what do you see happening?
Well, again, I'm not an expert, but like any problem, it cannot be 100% adaptive. It cannot be 100% preventive. Because of limited resources, it has to be a combination of both.
Yeah.
And the adaptive part comes where we individuals have to step up with pure civic sense. It's not very hard. And from the technological perspective, of course, as time goes by, solutions will be implemented So, in the long run, it has to be a combination of both. It's my humble opinion.
Okay. And what about you? What's comedy been like? I know years ago you opened a comedy club in Bangladesh, right? But yes. Are you still, obviously you're not performing live, I would assume right now, because none of us are performing live. But when you can perform live, are you doing shows around Bangladesh? Are you jumping into India? Are you regionally? Are you going around? Or what does that look like?
Well, pre-COVID time, I was just like any comic. I was a roadie.
We did a live podcast.
I was in New York. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I did a podcast from Stand Up New York, and I headlined there later on again.
I heard so it was
a great club. It was great. And so normal times, I would perform here. And when I said perform, meaning either at the comedy club or a lot of corporate shows, mm-hmm. I would go and perform at good money. And other times I would travel U.S., last year was four times actually, but it's a bit of a hike. But then you can go to India, you can go to Thailand or Malaysia or Singapore or the Philippines. They're not too far away, but you actually get to do a lot of stage time and different kinds of audiences and get a good workout. That all kind of came to a stop in March. So we are not doing any shows. The club's not doing any shows just because of the need for social distancing. Not that people are being very responsible now, but if we do a show, people are going to show up, but it's not going to be responsible of me to be a super spreader. So I'm not doing. I haven't done. I haven't done any shows, live shows, for the last 9 months. I barely have gotten out of my studio. So I'm doing my TV show, and I've done some of these Zoom shows, but they are not as great as, it's not the same as doing a live show.
They're not the same. So you should do mine sometime. I have a Friday night one. Same. I'm trying to think of, it's 8 p.m. Eastern. So I think, okay. Oh, that'd be early for you though. It'd be 7 a.m. For you. That might be
Yeah, but I mean, if it's an actual show with an audience, I'd be happy to join.
We had 350 people watch last week.
Oh, it's
Are you
huge.
Serious? That many people?
Yeah. On Zoom, wow. We get about 100. Let's see. We get about 100 to 150 on Zoom. And then we get an extra 200 on Twitch. We stream it. So there's about 100, 150 live in the Zoom. And then also 200 more watching on Twitch. Pretty cool.
Wow. That's amazing. And these are, and how is their reaction? Do they
it's get great.
As much of a kick?
Oh, they love it. I mean, we've been doing it since April. A lot of regular audience keep coming. We unmute maybe like one third of the people. And so you can hear all the laughter and everything, and maybe a little less than one third, but enough to where you can hear all the laughs coming through and then other people mute themselves and just watch. But it's great. We pay people to do the show. So it's a real show.
Wow. Real show. I'd be happy to do the show. I mean,
love
if you want somebody
you.
Joining in.
I would love to. Last week we had Nick. We had a guy in New Zealand. Nick Ratto did the show. So we have people around the world jump in, do it. It's a blast. But you got to wake up a little early. But we'll definitely get you on if you want to do it.
You can put him on later. In the show. Give him some time to.
Cool. Yeah, we'll put you on closer to the end of the hour so you can
drink some coffee here.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. And how's it work? So I watched your show. I don't know if it was your most. I think it must have been one of your more recent ones because you were talking about Myanmar and Aung San Suu Kyi. And and that's what we talked about 2 weeks ago on this show,
right?
The Rohingya people being kicked out of Myanmar and all that. So you're allowed to talk about things like that. Is that correct?
Yeah. In fact, that's a very recent monologue I did 2 weeks ago, I think. And that was on the Rohingya crisis. I talked about that because, again, it's not against, it's about another government.
So yeah.
You ban out other governments. That's okay.
Yeah, so that's okay, but it's a very serious issue. It's basically what 25 years ago happened in Bosnia, and that's happening over here, but nobody's taking notice. And a poor country like Bangladesh is accommodating over a million refugees, and it's definitely very commendable. I'm not being political here or anything, but I think as just pure human beings, Bangladesh has done a tremendous job. They said, fine. We don't know how we're going to feed them. We don't know how we're going to keep them. But we can't turn them back because if they turn back, they're going to get killed.
Yeah.
They've taken in over a million Rohingya into...
Over a million. Yeah. Just imagine. This country exploding, and still there are over a million refugees over here.
And now they're trying to figure out how to do it. We read there's like an island they're starting to move people to, or they're trying to figure out where to put people, basically, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of countries and a lot of the UN and everything. They're saying, you know, you take transporting some of them to the island. It's not that high up. It could face natural calamities.
Flooding.
Valid point. But the thing is that flooding, but
being in a flood zone is better than. Yeah, sorry.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, because where they are right now, it's there. It's I mean, you can see some photos. It's like a ghetto. I mean, if you cram a million people in several blocks of New York City, just imagine how unhealthy that is for the people who are there. It's really, I understand, even going to that island, though that island has been really built up as a nice city, but it does pose that environmental danger. That concern is there, definitely. But what else to do? I mean, if you have over a million people crammed in several blocks of New York City, and there's disease, there's drug peddling, there's so many things to do. I mean, there's no good solution. I mean, will any country take even a 20,000, 10,000? They won't. So Bangladesh is doing the best they can.
Yeah, it does seem like it's not the best. It's the island might not be perfect, but other countries should step up probably if they think that something else should be done about it, right? Other countries with more resources.
That is a very general answer. And there was this very famous video that happened in London. There's one, I forgot the gentleman's name. He asked the question to the Bangladeshi ambassador, they call the high commissioner. And they asked her, you know, you're doing great, but how come you're not doing, I don't think you guys are doing enough.
Yeah.
And then the ambassador said, you know, the question is really, are you guys doing enough? Are you going to take one refugee? You're not. We are exploding at the seams. We've taken 1.3 billion refugees. We don't know how we're going to feed them. We don't know how we're going to keep them. We don't have space, nothing. But we say, you know, let's just take them in because otherwise they're going to die. Have you done anything? You haven't. So basically shut the bleep up.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Money for.
Well, that's it. Navid, thank you so much for doing the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And educating us on your country, hopefully.
Do we feel better at all about our future? Probably not, but
I don't know. It sounds like it's going to be tough no matter what.
Yeah, unless we're damned if we do, damned if.
Yeah,
but you know, for 4 years, I have to say, for 4 years, you know, we were actually doing better than you guys. But now, January 20, I think things will turn around in the U.S. too.
I think so too. Yeah. Well, hopefully, I don't know if he can stop flooding, but we'll see. Maybe he can. Maybe
Joe Biden's got superpowers. That man.
Navid Mahbub. Thank you so much. Find him at comedian, NavidMahbub.com. Kaplan, go find us, patreon.com/lostinamerica. $5 a month, get the 3 episodes a week. $10, you get this t-shirt plus the 3 episodes a week. Kaplan, that's it. What should we do?
It's time to eat some magic spoon and it's time to get lost.
Get lost.